Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and let's talk politics. No, we're not going to talk about the merits of the presidential candidates, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and all the rest of them. We're going to talk about politics as affects the segment that you're interested in, which is integrative medicine and your health freedom. Today, we're going to draw upon the resources of one of our frequent contributors. He's Jonathan Emord. Jonathan is a practicing constitutional and administrative law attorney, and he knows ins and outs of government. He stood up for First Amendment free speech rights of manufacturers and of the public in relationship to these important issues of health freedom. So without further ado, here's Jonathan Emord. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us today.
It's great to be with you, Dr. Hoffman.
You know, I always get a little nervous talking to an attorney because I see the meter running, and I know your billable hour is a lot, so we'll try and cut to the chase. All right. So, I don't know. It's just kind of an instinctive thing when talking to an attorney. Okay, because you bill by the quarter hour or the one-eighth of an hour? I don't even know how that works.
Quarter hour.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad. When I was about to do this interview today, I kind of walked up to my practice manager in my office, and I said, I'm going to have Jonathan Emord on. And she said, great. And I said, well, what do you think I should ask him? And she said, why don't you ask him, what are they planning to do to us next? And I said, that's actually a pretty good question, because we in the integrative community are sometimes, the supplement manufacturers, people who practice integrative medicine, we're subject to the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune when it comes to government regulation. So perhaps we could start with that as a theme. What do you see looming on the horizon? What are some of the danger points in terms of what's happening?
Well, unfortunately, with the progressive bureaucratization of medicine, that is regulation through Health and Human Services that is writ large now through Obamacare, you have the misfortune of having outliers excluded. So, for example, anyone who provides tailored care in the sense that they would like to devote a significant amount of time to a holistic appraisal of someone in addition to an assessment of their immediate crisis so as to create a plan for them that actually can not only return them to wellness as much as possible, but also can prolong their lives and help them. Those types of approaches are really going to become increasingly more difficult to provide patients affordably. And that is because integrative alternatives to conventional medicine will increasingly be viewed as instances of fraud, will increasingly be viewed as non-reimbursable, and will increasingly be viewed as beneath the standard of care for the practice of medicine by HHS in conjunction with state medical boards. The real problem is that bureaucratization of medicine leads to compartmentalization. Basically, medical options that are approved and those that are not yet approved or that are disapproved. And for those who are inventive, who actually believe in the practice of medicine in the sense that you recognize the uniqueness of each patient and the need to tailor care for each patient, you come foursquare against this monolithic structure that says do not innovate, do not deviate, but adhere to a set course. Identify what the diagnosis is in particular, provide the specifically needed care, everything else is deemed to be an inefficiency or an excessive billing to a patient. So I'm afraid that that movement has been given a lift by Obamacare and is now, unfortunately, has a full head of steam. And also the FDA is chiming in, much more so. So oftentimes integrative physicians will use different approaches to the provision of medicine that might involve relying on compounding and compounding pharmacies. Mm-hmm. Well, this is clearly outside of what is deemed acceptable by HHS and is something that FDA wishes to shut down. So FDA is increasingly making it more difficult for compounding pharmacies to function and for physicians to engage in compounding and for physicians to provide tailored medical treatments.
I think that's very well said. And, you know, what's ironic is that clearly in the 3 decades that I've been practicing integrative medicine, there's been a really sea change in the public attitude towards integrative medicine. More and more people are embracing alternatives. You see the advent of natural food chains and innumerable health products, more and more supplements, all kinds of lifestyle innovations. But at the same time, the powers that be, the forces of regulation and bureaucracy, are making it harder and harder for the public to access these self-same services.
There's a tremendous divergence between public policy on health and private initiative. However you look at it, innovation is being suppressed. And innovation, of course, is the key to overcoming disease. So if we don't allow physicians and scientists and pharmacists and researchers to develop alternatives and then have them capable of being implemented through informed consent in circumstances where a cure for a disease is not deemed possible through conventional means, you shut off an entire universe that is the source, if there ever is going to be one, to resolve these problems. Instead, what you have is increasingly pressure to give an ever greater green light to large pharmaceutical companies that have undue influence over the FDA, and the adoption by FDA of anti-competitive barriers, and same thing by other parts of the government, HHS, anti-competitive barriers that block out any innovation from any source other than an official channel, FDA granting a drug application or FDA authorizing a clinical trial. So that really does shut down innovation. We look back 100 years in American history, and a physician was an innovator. Physician would work with the individual patient to do his level best to find some means of treating disease even when treatments or cures were not possible, and that was considered the practice of medicine. We move to the present time, and the practice of medicine has increasingly become a categorization approach where a physician is simply attempting to find what the diagnosis is, and then there's a written answer for that, which is a prescribed set of drugs or a operation using specific techniques. And if you instead were to say for a minute, I question this and I want to do something else for these various reasons, you become subject to Medicare audits, you become the subject of peer criticism, you become the subject of health board review, and you are said to have engaged in a substandard level of care.
Well, that's actually perfectly encapsulates what's happening. Let's focus on the issue of EMRs, electronic medical records. You know, they're hailed as a real innovation because, you know, in the past it's been hard to get records from one place to another, and you have to keep asking a patient what drugs are you on, and, you know, in a way that it is convenient to be able to pull up all of a patient's medical history. But one of the problems associated with these EMRs is that it kind of fortifies this standardization of medicine. You dial in a diagnosis, it virtually gives you an algorithm. It almost seems like they're trying to replace doctors' initiative and creativity with some sort of Watson-like computer that spews out a series of possible options. And if it's not A, B, C, D, you're out of luck. You can't implement a treatment.
Or in a free market system where you can choose your primary care physician and the experts who you wish to treat you, these issues are unimportant because they have all the information. You could have, through private means, developing some sort of an electronic database and use of mobile apps that would give up to the minute, up to the second, information to physicians that you've chosen for care.
Which is good.
But which is all good. But when you instead create this bureaucratized system where you don't have control over who's going to be your treating physician, you don't really have control over what hospital is ultimately going to see you in an emergency situation, and you really have no control over the course of treatment simply because you don't have that person that you have a history with and can trust. So in that environment, the creation of personally identifying information that is encrypted and available only to these institutions, it creates a situation where you can have sort of a less... first of all, you might have more constraint on physicians who are providing you care, such that they may fear innovation, but also you become another statistic. Essentially, it's dehumanizing the practice of medicine. It's causing this system of preference for, this is the diagnosis, this is the drug, to dominate. And I'll tell you, this system is woefully failing. So you end up with people who have cardiac conditions being on a host of drugs, some of which are contraindicated, simply because a physician can't engage in this kind of strict scrutiny of the patient that enables the physician to titrate down drugs, alter approaches, use lifestyle modification, etc., because they simply cannot do that. They're locked into a system that requires them, against malpractice, against the risk of being deemed to provide substandard care or being audited, to ensure that, he has an arrhythmia, he's got to have this drug. He's got high blood pressure, I'm going to give him this drug.
Right, it's by protocol.
There might be a conflict there, but as long as he doesn't complain, I'm going to go ahead and do it. That's unfortunately a lot of the problem. It's not just in the case of heart disease, it's in the management of type 2 diabetes, it's in the management of all manner of chronic diseases, including cancer. Do we really want a medical system that, rather than being patient-centric and responsive to the needs and interests of the patient, is government-centric and is responsive to the dictates of HHS and to the insurance providers? We're going in heavily in the direction of being a system that's dominated by the dictates of HHS and its proxies, the insurance companies.
Is this about sensible cost containment, or is it really a form of rationing top-down?
It's a form of rationing. It's a prelude. It's basically laying the foundation for a single-payer system, socialized medicine, which has failed all over the world. What we have now is a corporatist approach where we turn over all the cards to the insurance industry and a select group of insurance companies. Obamacare is failing because it's uneconomic.
Right.
You can't force people to pay for something they don't want, and that's what it's attempting to do. So it's an utter failure in that regard. But it's almost designed to fail because the desire from the start was not for this system, but rather for socialized medicine, for the quote-unquote single-payer system, which unfortunately is the absolute bane of good health care. As we know, all over the world where socialized medicine is in place, people are forced to have serious operations delayed many, many, many months, sometimes years. People die in such systems from waiting. People also have complications that arise from the absence of needed care, and thus have more disease symptoms compounded by virtue of the fact that they didn't have prompt care. So it has been the hallmark of American medicine that you can get prompt care in this country. People have come all over the world. That's not necessarily how it's going to be in the next 10, 15 years, because we are in the midst of a physician shortage. It's going to be exacerbated by Obamacare, because bright young minds don't want to be bureaucrats, and you have your choice to go to medical school or to go to into another profession these days. A good number of people are not willing to go through medical school, incur the debt, only to become subjected to malpractice suits and bureaucratization, second-guessing from insurance companies and from the government.
And what about malpractice reform? That was promised as part of an overall sweeping reorganization of medicine, is that we were going to do some of that. So what became of that? That was part of the bold step forward with Obamacare.
Well, some of the states have engaged in sort of a malpractice reform, but it hasn't worked. And it's actually caused a new burden to arise, where people who are harmed when there's a cap on recovery, for example, like in Virginia or in Nevada or in other states, you end up with people who are seriously injured by someone, right, because they commit malpractice and then you can't recover. Well, that's not the solution to the problem. We want standards to arise in the judiciary that require causality and proof that the physician is the responsible agent for the injury if the physician is going to be sued. The problem, though, is that this system's kind of, the current environment is kind of encouraging malpractice, because if you can't give the best care, but you have to give rather a one-size-fits-all approach, you're invariably going to have more injuries than if you provide tailored care, and that means more litigation. And I don't mean to say that the deluge of litigation that we have is because bogus suits are not being filed. No, they are. And that's a problem for the judiciary, to come up with standards to compel at the start of a case proof of a reasonable basis to show causality, and to prevent physicians from being who are good practitioners from being pushed through a system just because someone has an accusation. But when you try to legislate reform in the courts that just deny people access to the courthouse, that's not the solution. And when you ask yourself, well, why is this environment conducive to so much medical error? I mean, prescription drugs being given wrong prescriptions so often, in hospital patients being exposed to staph infections with such regularity, and lack of proper sanitation and inadequate care and so on. All of that is because we've created an unworkable system. We've created a system that's asking too much of physicians and is giving them too little leeway in the provision of care. In that kind of system, people become jaded. Bureaucrats are not efficient. You know, bureaucrats are risk averse. Bureaucrats are unwilling to compete. They don't want to be noticed, and that's what we're doing to doctors. We're making them not want to be standouts for fear of what'll happen to them.
There's no question.
That leads to a mundane practice of medicine. We want a dynamic practice of medicine.
Indeed, and you know, a lot of doctors will do it by the book, and if the patient succumbs, the patient at least died. After you've administered all the appropriate drugs, all the sanctioned surgical procedures, and you didn't step out of the box. So you've covered a certain part of your anatomy.
Yep.
All right. With that gloomy picture, this concludes part one of today's conversation with Jonathan Emord. He's an outstanding First Amendment attorney. He knows his way around FDA and regulation. And he's a good guy, standing up for health freedom for us in Washington, D.C. In part two, I want to talk a little bit more about supplements. I want to talk about compounding pharmacies. And there's a new push to regulate supplements like drugs. Good idea? Bad idea? We'll find out from today's guest, Dr. Anointed you as a doctor, but you're an attorney, Jonathan Emord, Esquire. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.